is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6... 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you've read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well now, good afternoon, everybody. This is Guy James, coming to you from a rain-soaked Southwest Florida today. Rain all over the place here today, but it's a welcome rain, I can tell you that, a warm welcome rain. I hope it's a beautiful day where you are today. Welcome to the Guy James Show. Glad to have each and every one of you along with us. For you newbies that may have stopped by, I do want to let everybody know that we are an, as advertised, an unabashed liberal democratic talk show. Here to talk about the political issues of the day and who knows, maybe a couple of other things beside. Today we're going to have a guest at the bottom of this hour, a gentleman by the name of Chalmers Johnson. He was an outside consultant for the CIA for several years, and he will have some interesting information about the CIA, always an interesting subject, coming up, like I said, at the bottom of this hour. This is a talk show. I don't want to do all the talking. I expect you to do some of the talking. And if you'd like to join the conversation today and have a comment on what we're talking about, why, give us a call at 866-546-5254, toll-free, 866-546-5254. And if you've got an unlimited calling plan, got minutes to spare, why, try us at 941-876-6896. Well, now we've got all the details out of the way. How was your weekend? Did you have a good weekend this weekend? We have the official Guy James Show puppies in the room today. We've got Kukla and Sophie, the official Guy James Show Yorkies. Hopefully they'll be nice and quiet throughout the show today. But if you do hear a little chirp once in a while, you'll know where it came from, because one of them, especially Sophie, doesn't mind expressing her opinion now and then. So. love those puppies, I really do. Lots of news to talk about this week, and I don't know where to begin. We've got interviews scheduled for every day this week, interviews that I'm sure you'll be interested to hear. Of course, as you know, the right-wingers were going absolutely nuts all day yesterday, starting out with the Laura Ingraham in the morning and the drug junkie Limbaugh at noon and then at 3 o'clock. With the Bush Nazi Sean Hannity, and right on through the evening, on and on and on, talking about O'Hanlon and Pollack's New York Times op-ed. They were just absolutely breathless over it. They were ecstatic. They called these guys a couple of flaming libs from a liberal think tank. Nothing could be further from the truth, from the Brookings Institute. Limbaugh spent his entire show, and I listened intently to find out what he would have to say about it yesterday. He did exactly as I thought he would. He spent the entire 3 hours building a straw man about how the libs are all unhappy now. Now that we know The true story has come out in the New York Times, a newspaper, by the way, reviled by the right for never telling the truth in their opinion. But all of a sudden, we have Pollack and O'Hanlon coming out with this story about their trip to Iraq for a few days and come back. And what was the title of the story? It was like, oh, my God, how wonderful things are in Iraq. And the right-wingers just went crazy on it all day yesterday. They spent hours and hours talking about it. I do want to remind everybody, once again, I'm having a hard time thinking what the title of that... what was the title of that story? Anyway, I saw the O'Hanlon on TV last night saying that he did not choose the title of that story. He did not. The New York Times did. So he had no input on the title of that story, and I must say he backpedaled quite a little bit from the story. And I do want to remind everybody that just last week, on July the 26th, O'Hanlon published a starkly different assessment of the conditions in Iraq, unlike what they put in the New York Times on Sunday. He promised this would be a pivotal summer. Now the situation in Iraq remains tenuous at best. And just went on to tell how bad it really was over there. But then on Sunday, they have this op-ed come out. And, of course, our good friend Glenn Greenwald in the Salon magazine, much to the chagrin of Tucker Carlson last night, wrote a big, long article. And we'll talk about it a little later in the program today, if you like. But my, oh my, how they latched onto that, how desperate they are to have this disaster, literally to turn this sow's ear that we've got into a silk purse. You know, that's an old saying, you can't turn a sow's ear into a silk purse. And that's exactly what they're trying to do. As you well know, the war is a disaster. You've heard firsthand on this program and others as well, people coming to you live from Baghdad, for example, as we had just a week or two ago, not from inside the green zone, but out in the streets of Baghdad, telling us how things really are, telling us the situation of how much water they have, safe water to drink, telling us just how much electricity they really have, telling us how safe the residents of Iraq actually feel, how they are with their jobs, their lives. It's a disaster. And they can print all the stories they want to in the New York Times by the two schmoes on Sunday and have all the right-wing comments they want to about it, but it's not going to change it. Humpty Dumpty can't put this thing back together again. Bush, of course, being Humpty Dumpty. 866-546-5254. We'd love to have you join the program. And, of course, the ongoing story about Gonzalez. Now, we know that Arlen Specter yesterday gave him, what was it, 18 hours to get the truth out. He gave him till noon today. Did anybody see anything happening over this? Or what, Arlen? 18 hours to get his story straight, or what? I didn't hear any of any disastrous things happen. And you know, the thing that really surprises me here is people seem surprised. They actually seem surprised, and most particularly a few Republicans I've talked to, they seem surprised that Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez lied. Just shocking to them. Like they expected him to tell the truth. Why should he tell the truth? After all, who's going to investigate him? The Justice Department? He is the Justice Department. And even if he were investigated, even if he were brought to trial, and even if he were convicted of perjury, he'd never go to jail. Because Bush would pardon him, just like he did for Scooter Libby. So good old Gonzo and anyone in the Bush administration can break the law with veritable impunity, and they can get away with it. And they know that. They know it. And the Democrats don't have the votes to impeach Bush and Cheney. It takes 2/3 of the Senate to remove Bush from office. A lot of the Democrats say, well, they want to impeach Bush, but nothing's going to happen unless the Republicans decide to stop help breaking the law, too. The Republicans are the ones that are allowing Bush to flaunt the law. We need to hold the Republican Party accountable for allowing the Bush administration to act in the manner that they've been acting, and his willingness to look the other way about Gonzo. This is a lawless bunch that's in there right now. You know, stop and think about it. Without Gonzo, there never would have been a Junior Bush presidency in the first place. Did you think about that? He's been hooked up with Junior Bush for a long, long time now. He's the one that, when Junior was called to jury duty in Texas, got him out of the jury duty. And he got him out of the jury duty because he knew that if he had to go in and tell the truth to get on the jury, to be interviewed for the jury, he would have had to talk to, about his DUI arrest and possibly some other things he didn't want to talk about in his past. And if he'd had to do that, he would not ever have run for the presidency because he knew he couldn't get elected because the conservatives wouldn't have backed him. And Gonzalez was the one that was responsible for that whole mess. Kept that whole thing out of the public eye until, what, the last day or 2 days, whatever it was, before the election. So Gonzalez is not some dupe here. He's a man who has been a willing accomplice in the crimes of the Bush administration. He was a willing accomplice back in the days when Junior Bush was merely the governor of Texas. And he's not going to change. And Junior probably is not going to drop his loyalty for this guy. Because, after all, Gonzo does know where all the bodies are buried. So they will make sure to keep all of their people out of legal jeopardy. I don't think there's any question about that. We learned that with Scooter Libby. If something should happen with Gonzo getting indicted or whatever, he'll be protected as well. I think we know that. And, of course, we've got the story about our good friend, Joe Lieberman. Can't keep his mouth shut. It wasn't good enough for him to win as an independent. He has to stab the Democrats in the back every chance he gets now. Now he's speaking out against all the Democrats who are anti-war. I'm sick and tired of seeing Joe Lieberman do this. Why don't the Democrats just tell him to get out? They don't want to talk to him anymore. Disassociate themselves from Joe Lieberman. Be an admirable thing to do, in my opinion, don't you think? 866-546-5254. We'll be back in just a moment.
And now a message from the President of the United States, George W. Bush.
Good morning. This is George W. Bush, your President of the United States. I know I hadn't spoken to you in the weekly radio address lately, but that's just because it's hard work running a country this big. Deciding everything, watching over you is not easy because you have all these freedoms. Sure, I can tap your phones, but you might not even be at home to make a call. So some nights I barely get any sleep. There's a great deal of stress on this job. I need more vacations. So for the next month or so, I'm going to be studying monkeying with the monks from Tibet. Because they are very good at stress reducing. First, I'm going to take a vow of silence. Like that, but not yet, because I have to finish this weekly radio address. And if the silence thing doesn't work, I'm going to stop eating. I'm only going to drink. If that doesn't work, I'm going to give up and go home. And eat a whole package of hot dogs because I'll be so hungry. And then I'm going to take a nap. In the meantime, Dick Cheney's going to be running the store, and there's going to be some really old special radio addresses by dead people. God bless you.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
Head on RadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
When I was a little bitty boy, just up off of the floor, we used to go down to Grandma's house every month in the snow. We'd have chicken pie and country ham, homemade butter on the bread. But the best darn thing about Grandma's house was a great big feather bed. It was 9 feet high and 6 feet wide, soft as a downy chick. It was made from the feathers of 411 geese, and the home was a clock for the tick. Big hole, eight kids and four hound dogs, and a piggy we stole from the shed. We didn't get much sleep, but we had a lot of fun on Grandma's feather bed. After supper, we'd sit around the fire, the old folks would spit and chew. Paul would talk about the farm and the war, and Granny'd sing a ballad or two. I'd sit and listen and watch the fire till the cobwebs filled my head. Next thing I'd know, I'd wake up in the morning in the middle of the old feather bed. It was 9 feet high and 6 feet wide, soft as a downy chick. It was made from the feathers of 411 geese, took a whole one apart for a tick. Big hole, eight kids, and four hound dogs, and a piggy we stole from the shed. We didn't get much sleep, but we had a lot of fun on Grandma's feather bed. Well, I love my ma, I love my pa, I love Granny and Grandpa too. I've been fishing with my uncle, I wrestled with my cousin, I even kissed Aunt Lou. Ooh, but if I ever had to make a choice, I guess it ought to be said. But I'd trade them all, plus a gal down the road for Grandma's feather bed. I'd trade them all, plus a gal down the road.
Well, the basic bed isn't a gal down the road.
It was 9 feet high and 6 feet wide, soft as a downy chick. It was made from the feathers of 411 geese, took a whole bull's cloth for a tick. And it hole eight kids, four hound dogs, and a piggy we'd stolen from the shed. We didn't get much sleep, but we had a lot of fun on Grandma's feather bed. We didn't get much sleep, but we had a lot of fun on Grandma's feather bed.
Ah, yes, John Denver, Grandma's feather bed. I love John Denver's happy music. I miss him. Tragic death. He died so young in that plane accident. One of my favorite entertainers. I like many, many different kinds of music across the entire scope of music. Well, there's a few things I don't like, but miss John Denver. Loved him and his music. Just something about it. I don't know what, but do a lot of John Denver music myself. Always did a little performing out, and that was always one of my favorite songs to do right there. John Denver's Grandma's Feather Bed, and yeah, lots of his songs. Anyway, 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join in on the festivities here today. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we're going to have our interview with Chalmers Johnson. He's a former consultant with the CIA. What do you think will happen if General Petraeus comes home next month? Well, actually in September, close to next month now, one day away from next month. What do you think will happen if he comes home and says, oh, things are going real well, and I think we ought to hang on there for a while, give us some more money, give us some more time? Let me predict what will happen. I think that if he comes home and says something like that, I think many of the Democrats will split off and go right along with him, go along with Bush, and agree to extend the war, won't have the guts to put a stop to it like they ought to, and it will carry on. And I will predict that this war will be going on and on and on when the next president takes the oath of office, whoever he or she may be. The war will not be one bit less in intensity than it is at this moment. What do you think? Am I dead right or dead wrong on that? I just can't see a significant effort by the Democrats to put a stop to it, to defund it. And let's face it, that's the only way they're going to get it done. It's the only way they will get it done is to defund the war, not vote for any more funds to go. And I see no evidence whatsoever that the majority of Democrats would take that action, at least enough of them to swing it. I just don't think it'll happen. What do you think? 866-546-5254. And if you have an unlimited calling plan, want to call us with your spare minutes, 941-876-6896. Do remember that General Petraeus all of a sudden has become, I don't know, he's become all the great generals we've ever had in this country all rolled into one all of a sudden. You would think. All of a sudden, he's the man, he's the savior, going to save us all. He's the greatest general that ever lived. He's the man that everybody's listening to, waiting on with bated breath at the moment, to hear what General Petraeus has to say. I have a question. Since early on in this war, we knew we were in trouble. The Bush administration, right after the opening salvos were over with and the heavy military conflict of the initial phase of it was over with, we knew there were trouble. There was trouble. We knew that there was a serious insurgency. We knew that. We've known that for a long time now. We knew that there were some Al-Qaeda, some foreign fighters. We knew all this. We knew the IEDs started killing our people and all, and we knew that we had tremendous problems there. We didn't have enough armament. We didn't have enough equipment that we needed. And so we knew early on that this whole affair was not going well. And, of course, we know what part of the problem was. Part of the problem, of course, was Donnie Rumsfeld, an utter failure. A man who will go down in history as an utter failure as Secretary of Defense. A man who didn't know his proverbial ass from a hole in the ground when it came to prosecuting a war. He tried to do it on the cheap. He smacked down any of the generals and military people who actually knew what they were doing. Overruled them. Didn't send in enough troops. Didn't send in enough arms. Went to, you have to go to war with the army you have, not the one you wish you had, he said. Demeaning our military. But it's gone bad all along, ever since the initial couple of months. If General Petraeus were this great savior, if he was this general who knew all the answers, why didn't Bush appoint him way back then? Did Petraeus do something to distinguish himself between then and now? I submit to you that he did not. I submit to you that he did not distinguish himself in any fashion whatsoever. I would tell you that he's the best yes man they could find. I will tell you that he's the guy they found that they could send over there and told him before he left, if you were a little fly on the wall and could have heard the conversation, when you come back here in September, Mr. General Petraeus, you will tell the Congress of the United States exactly what we want you to tell them, and you will tell them that it is positive that the surge that we've dreamed up, us and the Kagan family, that is all is well, there's much hope, that the people of Iraq love having our troops there, they need us there, they want us there. And you will tell the Congress of the United States when you come home in September, you will give them that assessment, and therefore we'll be able to extend this war for as long as we need to. I would submit to you that is why General Petraeus is in charge of operations in Iraq right now. Not because of any distinguishing factors that he has done, certainly not. And like I said, if he was this great general, the know-all, be-all, end-all of all of our problems in Iraq, why did they wait until, what was it, January or whatever, to put him in charge and lead this surge? Anybody want to answer that one? Anybody on the right have a good answer for that? Did they all of a sudden discover him sitting in the back and say, oh my God, there's the guy we need? No. They needed a yes man, and they have one in General Petraeus. The big question is, when he comes home in September and gives his report, and you know what it'll be, you know that no matter how things are in Iraq, if the electricity situation isn't any better, if the insurgency situation isn't any better, if the killing of the civilians isn't any better, the infrastructure isn't any better, no matter what, he'll come back and he'll say, well, you know, things aren't perfect. Let's predict right now what he'll say. Things aren't perfect. We know there's room for progress. We know things could be better, but there's much progress. We have many of the hospitals open, the schools open. Many of the people in Iraq are very safe right now. There's just a few isolated pockets of trouble. Blah, 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 blah. You've heard it all. You've heard all the stories. So you know full well what the report's going to be, and there will be enough Democrats peel off and say, well, okay, let's give them another chance. You know that's what's going to happen. I hate to be harbinger of bad things to come, but you know full well that will be what happens. That will be the report. And do remember that Junior Bush himself, way back in January, Junior Bush himself said that there were several things, several benchmarks. Clear back in January, Junior Bush said there were four benchmarks that the Iraqi government needed to meet by June of this year. Uh-huh. Remember that? By June. They had to get this oil law passed. They had to get a law passed specifying the distribution of the oil revenues. And there was the debathification rules that they had to get passed, and they had to get some progress on the Sunni Shiite reconciliation. They haven't made any progress on any one of those things that Junior Bush himself said had to be done by June, and they have made no progress on any of them. And yet, we get reports from this administration and their lackeys telling us how absolutely swimmingly things are going. Much progress. We have Tony Snow out every day telling us about the progress. Oh, I know things aren't perfect, but General Petraeus this and General Petraeus that. My God, I'm tired of hearing that. I'm so tired of hearing that. And I know you are as well. How many times can Junior Bush say the name Petraeus and Al-Qaeda in one speech? Oh, my God. Yes, indeed. Well, we're going to pause for a break and get our guest on the phone, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Neon jigs staring at the ceiling, the stars above the radar range. Song from a station wagon laying foundations on the shadows over passing planes. Well, I'm feeling good. It's 7 o'clock. We're gonna drive across the county line. Find Saturday night like an orphan child that the good days left behind. Well, I'm not sure we can stay.
And welcome back, everybody. Welcome to the Guy James Show. We're glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon here on the Head On Radio Network. Always glad to come into each and every one of your homes on during our show each day. And as promised, we try and have you interesting and insightful guests every day. And right now I have on the line with me Mr. Chalmers Johnson, a gentleman I've been looking forward to talking to. Chalmers, welcome to the program.
Thanks very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
You're coming to us from San Diego today?
That's correct, yeah.
All right. A land where the sun always shines, doesn't it?
Well, not always.
It never rains in Southern California, you know. I heard that in a song many years ago.
Yeah,
so,
it's a song, though.
You were a consultant for the CIA for a number of years. And I don't think there's an agency of the government that probably is more mysterious, maybe more interesting to the American public than the CIA, in many ways a very mysterious outfit. What was your capacity with a consultant? What was a consultant for the CIA do?
Well, let me say, first of all, about the mysterious quality. I'm not sure it should be mysterious. It is a function of the almost total secrecy that surrounds the agency. This secrecy is used to cover up any number of mistakes, crimes, violations of the law, and things of this sort. We'll probably get back to that in a moment. In 1967, I was asked by the then director of Central Intelligence, Richard Helms, to join the Office of National Estimates. They write the single most important intelligence analyses by the agency for the president, including the in that day the most important one each year, the Soviet Order of Battle. That since the early 1950s, the agency had brought in outsiders to try and control for bureaucratism, myopia, errors, things of this sort, to ask people who were specialists in international relations of various sorts to read their conclusions before they went forward and critique them. That's what we did. It was this consulting function was abolished in 1973 in the purge of the agency by James Schlesinger, when he and Henry Kissinger both decided they did not like anybody having direct access to the president. In fact, no director of Central Intelligence ever sat down with Richard Nixon in the Oval Office without Henry Kissinger being present. The agency's performance, but then so many things have damaged the agency's performance that in retrospect it doesn't seem to matter.
How did you, just on a personal note, how did you get involved in something like that? What was your background to be a consultant for the CIA?
Well, I was a China specialist. I was a chairman of the Center for Chinese Studies at the University of California, Berkeley. I had written extensively on Chinese communist affairs, and at the time I was interested in the agency only because it happened to have some of the best China specialists, analysts. We're now talking about the analytic side of things, not cloak and dagger, was flattered to be invited to come in. That's how that happened.
The intelligence estimate you were talking about a moment ago, is that a yearly thing? Is that the same one?
It comes up as requested by the White House. The Central Intelligence Agency is a private army of the president. It has virtually no effective oversight by anybody. Its budget is totally secret. There have been some leaks lately, and we know that it's between $44 and $48 billion. That's quite a bit of money for 17,000 employees to spend. Most of it is spent on dirty tricks, illegal operations abroad, so-called cloak and dagger work that is not included in its charter, but has always been the main thing that it specialized in since it was created in 1947. The intelligence estimates are the summary of what the government knows about a particular important topic in international relations that is of some importance. This is then put together in a readable form to be passed on to the president, and is scrutinized throughout the government, and including all the other intelligence agencies, those of the military services, of the State Department, the Defense Intelligence Agency, things of this sort. The it is the highest level of intelligence reporting that we have. The most famous report probably was the one of October 2002, which that is the one on weapons of mass destruction held by the Iraqi government, in which we now know not a single word in it was true, that it was totally deceptive, and that the United States were sucked into a war based on lies said to the Congress and to the public by the agency, having been manipulated heavily by the Vice President Dick Cheney.
That's what I wanted to ask you, to make a distinction. The people on the right, the hardcore neocons, will argue that it was no, it wasn't a lie. It was faulty intelligence. They blame the whole thing on the CIA. That it was when actually I think what you're claiming and what I actually believe is there was a lot of manipulation went on, and it was intelligence they wanted to hear, not necessarily what was.
And this has gone on for years. I mean, that is. The reason that I'm talking about this is not because my background as a consultant, that was quite interesting to me and valuable and useful at the time, but it is because of a long review I've recently done of a new book by Tim Weiner of the New York Times called Legacy of Ashes, which is the first truly documented history of the CIA that we've had since 1947. He's been working on this book for 20 years. He's obtained innumerable important documents that he has been allowed to declassify through the National Archives. He's interviewed well over 300 former intelligence officials, including over 10 directors of Central Intelligence. And it it is an absolutely devastating report on the worthlessness of the CIA. Let's understand something. In the term, I beg your pardon, Central Intelligence Agency, the key word is central. Harry Truman created it in 1947 to overcome a problem that had existed in the government since the attack on Pearl Harbor in December of 1941, namely, surprise attack in which the U.S. government had a great deal of knowledge that such a thing probably was coming. The naval intelligence had broken the Japanese military and diplomatic codes. The FBI was looking over the fence of the Japanese consul in Honolulu, observing him burning documents in his backyard. The problem was none of this stuff was coordinated. The FBI reported what it had discovered to J. Edgar Hoover, who, as usual, put it away for his use to intimidate government officials, never passed it on, certainly not to the admirals in Pearl Harbor. Truman wanted an organization that would collect intelligence through open sources as well as espionage, coordinate it all, and put it in a readable, usable form that could actually cause the government to act in time to prevent a surprise attack. As Weiner says in his book, more or less, the idea, if not the organization itself, of the CIA came into being on December 7th, 1941. The idea and the actual functioning of a central intelligence agency ended on September 11th, 2001, when it failed to detect a surprise attack. Since 9/11, it has more or less committed suicide by utterly worthless activities of one sort after another. But again, it's protected by an almost impenetrable secrecy, by the incompetence of the Congress in doing its legally enacted duties as for oversight. And it spends a lot of money at usually always making things worse.
Well, you said the word worthless in referencing an organization of 17,000
right.
people. If it were gone, we'd still need some sort of this whole thing was pointed out during 9/11, a failure of coordination of intelligence once again.
I totally agree. We have 16 intelligence agencies representing all the various different departments. The services, in the case of the services, they perform no function at all. That's inter-services rivalry. But the best intelligence agency we have that actually would meet the requirements of Harry Truman is INR, intelligence research in the State Department. We don't really need to go any further. Why don't we start comparing records on, say, accurate intelligence on Iraq before and after the war? INR stands out head and shoulders above anything the CIA could do, including in linguistic ability and genuine cultural knowledge of Iraq. As for clandestine operations, cloak and dagger work, we ought to cut back on those radically since they have gotten us into such terrible trouble around the world. But to the extent that one did desperately need one, turn it over to the Department of Defense to carry out. We simply don't need the CIA. It's a good example of how you create bureaucracies. They entrench themselves using their powers of secrecy and remain forever. I mean, the Constitution says in Article 1, I don't remember exactly which clause, but that the citizens of the United States should ultimately get an accurate accounting of how their tax dollars are spent. In the case of the CIA, that has not been true from the day it was created. It is simply impossible for a citizen or a member of Congress to do any form of effective oversight on the Central Intelligence Agency or the other 15 intelligence agencies. These are private, semi-military organizations of the president and are used usually for deeply illegal activities.
Well, tell me then, what are the politics of the situation? If the INR is the organization that best suits our needs along these lines, why have they not come to the forefront, and why is the Central Intelligence at the head of the line here?
Well, it's a historical matter. It goes back a long time in the way it was entrenched in the government. Rivalries between and dislike in many ways of the diplomatic service. In the case of Iraq, the Secretary of State Powell was simply ruined and his reputation destroyed by his going before the UN to give allegedly secret United States intelligence on the threat from Iraq. There's been in January of 2003, the information all came from the CIA. It was all wrong. It was revealed to be wrong within a very few days. He's never been able to live it down. You don't get over it, things like that. But in my view, what we need is presidential leadership. Now, then the reason we don't get it is fairly clear. The National Security Act of 1947 that created the CIA established five functions for it. Four of them were collecting, coordinating, analyzing intelligence information through open sources and through espionage, and sending this forward, that the highest form of which is the National Intelligence Estimate. The fifth function was just a grab-all that said, and anything else, the National Security Council, which is the president's foreign policy bureaucracy, that the National Security Council designates that it do. That ruined it right then and there, because it turns out what that was is dirty tricks. I mean, that is to say, intelligence collecting is an attempt to understand the world. Clandestine operations, cloak and dagger operations, like our routine overthrows of governments that get on our nerves, these are not intended to understand the world. They're intended to change the world, whether you understand it or not. They have almost invariably changed it for the worse. We are still paying at the present time for the first major use of this power, namely the overthrow of the Iranian government in 1953 for the sake of the British Petroleum Company that was asked us to help them out because the democratically elected Prime Minister of Iran, Mohammad Mossadegh, was threatening to nationalize the oil industry in order to bring greater profits from Iran's national resources to Iran than to the Royal Navy. One of the functions of the Director of Central Intelligence is on the day after a new president is inaugurated to go in and tell him he has these secret powers. That is, he can have anybody on earth eliminated, assassinated. He can send them to CIA prisons to be tortured. He can have countries overthrown. He can have governments or corporations undercut. One thing after another. And none of it is he can he be held accountable for. In fact, in most of the cases, nobody will ever know anything about it except the president himself. The ever since the CIA has been created, no president since 1947 once told that he has these powers of an absolute monarch has ever failed to use them. That's what he doesn't get from the State Department.
Well, it would seem to me, and I don't want to mention any names because of my political persuasion, but it seems to me there are certain people who may sit in the White House that's a particularly dangerous thing to do, is to tell them they had that kind of power.
I think it is. I think it is a very dangerous thing that we saw it in the case of Nixon, where he resigned rather than be impeached over the fact that he was using the CIA in highly illegal ways to attempt to cover up the Watergate break-in. And things of this sort. When we go back and look at the litany of things that presidents have ordered, and it's not, by the way, we're not here talking about just Republicans.
No, certainly not.
The Kennedy brothers, John and Robert, ordered a new clandestine operation every 3 days throughout the Kennedy administration. They were wild enthusiasts for these imperial or Roman powers. But that it includes, after all, the overthrow of the elected government of Chile, Salvador Allende, in 1973, brought to power probably the most odious dictator installed by anybody during the Cold War, namely General Augusto Pinochet. As we look around, I mean, I think back to the recent Olympic Games in Greece, in which Americans, so many Americans, and certainly TV pundits seem surprised by the anti-Americanism of Greece. Greece is probably the most anti-American democracy on earth. They will never forgive us for the Greek colonels between 1967 and 1973, one of the most odious and murderous regimes anybody ever put in power, and that was strictly a CIA operation. This is the thing that makes Tim Weiner's book so important to a citizen, is to get in and read what our government has been doing since 1947 down to 2007. And, well, the term for it, I use it in the title of my new trilogy on American foreign policy, but it's blowback. Blowback was a CIA term invented in the after-action report on our overthrow of the Iranian government in 1953, in which the agency wrote, this report was just finally declassified in the year 2000, wrote that that we're going to get some blowback from this operation. Blowback means retaliation for things our government has done in and to foreign governments, foreign countries. But it means one more thing. It means retaliation for things our government has done that have been kept totally secret from the American public. They are never kept secret from the people on the receiving end. The rest of the world knows all about these things. They've had too many of them. But the American public doesn't. So when the retaliation comes, as it did so spectacularly on September 11th, 2001, Osama bin Laden and the people around him were retaliating for our having abandoned them after our biggest single clandestine operation ever, namely the arming and sending into battle of the Afghan Mujahideen against the Soviet Union in the 1980s. When the retaliation comes, people can't put it in context. They don't see cause and effect. They start asking as puerile questions as one could imagine, but it was our president who asked, oh, why do they hate us? Well, as numerous people have commented around the world, the better question would have been, who doesn't hate us?
Well, let me ask you, he knew the answer to that, didn't he?
Well, I don't know whether he did or not. I mean, that is to say, we seem to have a president that didn't know the difference between Shia and Sunni Islam when he declared war, decided to invade a country ruled by a Sunni minority dictatorship. He brought the Shia to power.
So when there's a situation comes up, like right now, example, over the weekend, for example, we've heard about all the arms sales that they're going to try and make to the Middle Eastern countries. Certainly, the CIA knows all about that, and all it would appear to the average Joe citizen, to some of our listeners, and to myself, it would appear that there's a total lack of understanding by our government as to pouring gasoline on a raging fire that's already there with these arms sales. But that's not the case, is it?
I agree with you, but what we're talking about here is the mindset of imperialism and militarism that is not everything that we've done in the post-war world was deceitful or not in ultimately the public interest, including our own interest. But since the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991, and we began to convince ourselves, or our politicians drummed into us, that we had won the Cold War. No one won the Cold War. Both sides lost it. It's just they lost it first because they were always poorer than we are. We're getting about in the same position that Russia was in 1989 when it started to collapse. That we started to talk about full spectrum dominance, that we were beyond good and evil, that we could dominate the world through our military power, that we were going to start engaging in something called preventive war. That's what the Japanese did to us in December 1941. That's hubris. That's the ancient Greek crime of arrogance and carried to extremes, and it invites the attention. The title I use for my recent book, it invites the attention of the ancient Greek goddess of revenge, namely Nemesis. I believe she's looking at us very serious these days as people who have committed this kind of sin and are about to pay for it. But in concrete terms, that's, I think, the reason why we've developed a subculture called the Washington Establishment. They all think alike. They think in these terms. They justify what they do in terms of alleged national security, whereas in fact they have probably been the worst imaginable guarantors of our national security. We have expenditures on the defense establishment. That is the whole thing, not just the Department of Defense's annual appropriation, that now approaches $1 trillion. That's $1,000 billion per year, and we're toying with bankruptcy over this.
Yes.
So that there's a lot to be answered for here, but it doesn't appear to that the political system is capable of dealing with it.
I'm going to ask. We got a caller on the line that has a question for you. Is that okay?
Sure, fine.
Hi, you're on the Guy James Show. Do you have a question for Chalmers Johnson?
Yes, I do. Good afternoon, Guy. Bill from Toledo. What a great guest that you have on today.
Well,
I've read
you.
His books, Blowback and Sorrows of Empire, and I think he's probably one of the best guests that you've ever had on. And what I'd like to ask, Mr. Johnson, I'm really happy that you agreed to be on the Guy James Show.
Thank you.
And I would like to know, is that what you believe, that we're going to have to sit back and wait for everything to just fall in on itself because of this military and the military budget we have? Is there anything that you think we're going to be able to do, or are we just going to have to wait for it?
The subtitle of my new book is The Last Days of the American Republic. I'm sorry to say, I mean it. I'm not just trying to pump up the book or things of that sort. That's what it looks like. It's what the precedents of empires in the past, including the one on which the United States was modeled. After all, the Roman Republic went the same way. There is a precedent for doing something about it. That is the British Empire at the end of World War II, when its empire was, it had used Nazi methods. They called them administrative massacres in India. And they realized that having just, with the assistance of Russia and the United States, defeated Nazi Germany, they couldn't continue to rule their empire in through using Nazi methods. The problem is this. You can be a democracy domestically and an empire abroad, but you can't have both. You get one or the other. It's an unstable, probably history tells us, one of the most unstable combinations. If you try to maintain your empire, you're going to lose your domestic democracy. That's what happened to the Roman Republic. If you want to maintain your domestic democracy, you have to get rid of your empire. That's what the British, after World War II, did. They didn't do a very good job about it. They certainly didn't do a very clean job, and anything but an honest job. But that's what they did do, and they remain a democracy without an empire, and they are much, much, much better off for that. One of the things I'm trying to do in writing this trilogy is to mobilize inattentive citizens to what they're about to lose and let them know that we in America ought to be talking about imperialism and militarism.
Well, it just seems like we're such poor students of history.
I believe that's true. It's one of the things that certainly Wiener has demonstrated to my satisfaction is that we're not any good at espionage. We just simply aren't capable of doing it because we never recruit people with enough linguistic and cultural knowledge to actually recruit agents in foreign countries effectively. We are also apparently the most easily penetrated organizations on Earth in that we are forever losing assets in foreign countries to spies that have penetrated the CIA. And we've never been any good at controlling them. That after Alder Kames, you hate to think how many people we had working for us in Russia went before KGB firing squads, thanks to bungling back in Washington and the appointment of the wrong kind of people. As for clandestine operations, well, we are simply bunglers there. We do it all the time with disastrous results, perhaps the Bay of Pigs the best example.
Yes. Oh, yes, and it was. But at least we had somebody sat there a few days later and said, hey, I'm responsible for this. So
Well, give John Kennedy credit for it, but I guarantee you he couldn't have evaded it.
Yeah.
And moreover, it is one of the great issues that comes up in Wiener's book, still the assassination of JFK. He and his brother sat around publicly talking about how they were going to assassinate Castro and this, that, and the other thing. One of the things that does come out in Wiener's history of the CIA, the number of people who didn't lie to the Warren Commission on this subject, but that who sincerely believed that Fidel just got there first.
In your opinion?
I don't know. The evidence is so overwhelming that there was foreign involvement in this, it is extremely hard to discount that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Chalmers, I want to thank you so much for being on the program today. We're up
thank
against
you for
the clock
me.
Here. Your new writings available now?
Yes, the book is called Nemesis: The Last Days of the American Republic. It's part of the American Empire Project of Metropolitan Books.
Is there a website?
Yes, there is. They're for the American Empire Project.
American Empire Project.
Yeah.
Chalmers Johnson, thank you so much for being our guest today.
I certainly appreciate your inviting me.
Fascinating talk. Thank you. Well, not a fun thing to hear, but something we must hear nonetheless, and I completely agree with him. I think if we don't do something quick, and there may be nothing we can do, that we may be in the last days of this this great, if you want to use the word empire, this great civilization that we created and have failed to understand history. We've had so many lessons from history over the years that we could have learned, things that we could have avoided as a nation, but did not. And it goes across party lines. What a shame. You know it, I know it, many people know it, but people in the right places of power in our government were too greedy. Are too stupid to understand. You listen to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be back right after the news. Don't you dare go away.
This news brief brought to you by the International News Net.
Peru's president, Alan Garcia, has said his government has not done enough to improve the lives of the poor. Garcia promised that increased investment would cut poverty before the end of his term in 2011.
Iraq's national government is refusing to take possession of thousands of American-financed reconstruction projects. The U.S. will be forced to either hand them over to local Iraqis, who often lack proper training, or commit new money to an effort that has already consumed billions of U.S. taxpayers' dollars.
Former Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev accused the U.S. of having a winner complex after the end of the Cold War. Gorbachev criticized the current U.S. administration for trying to build a new empire in the world that other countries would not accept.
For more news and exclusive interviews, see the complete International News Net World Report each weekday evening on Free Speech TV, 9415 Dish Network, or visit our website, inenworldreport.net. Stymied by Bush's stem cell policy, the National Institutes of Health recently were refused a grant application for what would have been the first federal study to compare several of the new, less politically contentious stem cell lines. Rudolph Giuliani, the front-runner in the GOP presidential race, has engineered sinister alliances with multinational construction corporations and profited financially from a drug cover-up that ultimately proved deadly for some Americans. This past May, the makers of the drug OxyContin pleaded guilty to claiming to doctors that the drug was less addictive than other pain medications. Rudolph Giuliani and his consulting company, Giuliani Partners, spent the last 5 years negotiating with federal prosecutors on behalf of Purdue Pharma Limited Partnership, the pharmaceutical company that made the drug. The punishment for the corporate pushers who marketed this drug, knowing it produced a heroin-like high and a commensurate addiction rate, a $634 million fine. The no-prison settlement was plotted by Giuliani. OxyContin-related deaths increased fivefold from 1996 to 2001.
James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Begin countdown. Six. Five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey there. Welcome back to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. I want to say hello to Billy Shears, a bit under the weather. And Billy, hope you get to feeling better real soon. Enough said. Get back to good health, Billy. 866-546-5254. If you'd like to join us on the program today, you're a quiet bunch today. 866-546-5254. Rather disconcerting to hear what Chalmers Johnson had to say about us being in the last days of this great experiment. It is a shame. It is a shame that, and I didn't have time to ask him, but, you know, on all these things that we do around the world, all these messes we get into, and when we got to the point after the Cold War of saying, well, we're the lone great power left in the world, now we have this preventative war power where we can go around the world and be the world's policeman and stop these wars from happening and protect this, that, and the other nation from God knows what. Have you noticed, or is it clear to all of you? I'm sure it is to my listeners. Obviously, it's not clear to the listeners of people like the Limbaugh show and the Hannity show. Certainly, those people aren't all that clear about anything except their utter stupidity in many cases. But and I'm sorry, but that's how I feel about it. You've all noticed that when we do these things, when it boils down to the bottom, when we get down to what's left, it's not for any altruism, is it? It's not for any altruistic reasons that we're going around the world. It's always money, isn't it? Talked about the petroleum company, Mossadegh, in Iran, the things we've done in Central America for the fruit companies, the things we've done for oil companies all over the world. It's never for altruism. It's never because we've got motives to truly want to help these people of another nation. We didn't give a damn about the people of Iran, just as we don't give a damn about the people in Iraq. It literally slays me when we have this president get up and his cronies and they get up and talk about, oh, how we're going to do this for the Iraqi people. We're going to do that for the Iraqi people. We're not going to do crap for the Iraqi people. That was never the intent. They never gave a damn about them in the first place. I just wish they'd tell the truth. Say, hey, no, we're not doing this. We're doing this for the fat cats in this country. We're doing this for the Halliburtons and the Bechtel and the KBRs and those folks, so that their stockholders can make a lot of money. So, you know, so that the Americans, good old Americans, will have a lot of money. Why don't they just say it? And Ray just reminded me. Yes, let's not forget New Orleans. Let's not forget that a lot of the things that we're going to go in and help those people. Does anybody think that the Bush administration and many of the people involved in the decisions that went into helping the people of New Orleans or the acts that the government did perform in the city of New Orleans and in the Mississippi area down there, does anybody think they did that to really help those folks? If they did, if they had those people's welfare in mind, why hasn't the help and the aid and all continued? It hasn't. They've dropped it like a hot rock. As long as it was a politically correct thing to do, as long as it was out in the open that, oh, gee, we're doing everything we can to help these people. Let's face it, there and other places in the world, most especially recently there in New Orleans, fat cat people, once again, got rich. Sent their own trucking companies, their own trailer companies, their own cruise boat company. Sent all their people in to suck the money out of that community that was sent in by the government. And let's make no mistake about it. That was the plan all along. The people of New Orleans, as far as the government's concerned, ended up with practically nothing. And again, I don't want to slight everybody. Let me just say in our Gulf Coast region, everybody that was hit by Katrina. The people didn't benefit from the government services that went in there. The fat cats benefited from it. They took the money and they ran, and the people are all sitting there high and dry now, just like we all predicted it would be. The services have not been restored. The communities have not been restored. The health care, the infrastructure in some cases. Tens of thousands of people not able to go home because they've got no home to go to. nowhere to turn. No, folks, the actions of the government, it's never for the best of the reasons, or hardly ever. It's always about money. It's always about money for someone, somewhere. And isn't it a damn shame that it's come to that in this country? It's always been like that. We've always had that. We've just never had it this much before. We've never seen the greed and the corruption quite so out in the open as it is now. What a shame. And speaking of greed and corruption, oh yes, I know it's just alleged, but you've all heard by now that Senator Ted Stevens, mouthy bastard senator of the state of Alaska, and what is wrong with those people electing that man to the United States Senate, knowing his family's background up there, his son is a thief, he's a thief, sue me, had his home raided by the FBI and the IRS. The FBI and the IRS raided the home of Senator Ted Stevens in Girdwood, Alaska, yesterday. Stevens and his wonderful son, Ben, have been under investigation due to their relationship with the oil services firm, Vaco. Now, seems to be a problem for Senator Stevens that the former head of that firm, Bill Allen, has been convicted of bribing Alaskan politicians. And the story goes on to say, Stevens' home in Girdwood has come under federal scrutiny since it was revealed that bills from contractors remodeling the senator's home initially were sent to Vaco, the oil company, and then routed to Stevens. Stevens, who has insisted that he has done nothing wrong, says he paid all the contractors with his own funds. There's no comment yet from the Justice Department or the IRS other than confirming the raid took place. No other sites in Alaska were searched, according to the Justice Department spokeswoman. Now, Stevens said had the normal political comment on this. He said, I urge Alaskans not to form conclusions based upon incomplete and sometimes incorrect reports in the media. I continue to believe this investigation should proceed to its conclusion without any appearance that I have attempted to influence its outcome. The legal process should be allowed to proceed so that all the facts can be established and the truth determined. Now, there was an entire paragraph by a politician that said absolutely nothing except, I ain't saying nothing, that's it. That's pretty much it. Now, I found this little tidbit completely contemptible. That it turns out, it turns out that the IRS or the FBI, I don't know which, let his attorneys know, let the senator know ahead of time that the home was going to be raided. Now, isn't that convenient? Let them know ahead of time. Hey, by the way, we're going to... Why not just send him a registered letter that says, by the way, we're going to raid your house. And you know all those invoices you got that, you know, their bank records and everything that you probably don't want us to see. Better shred those tonight. Okay? What an ugly mess. And then we've got this news that comes over the weekend that we're going to sell a huge amount of arms to Israel, the Saudis, and Egypt, and anybody else in the area over there that can afford them. Oh, yeah. Yeah, let's give the Saudis another $20 billion or sell them another $20 billion. I mean, God knows they can pay for it. $20 billion worth of arms. Tell me something. What do the Saudis need $20 billion worth of arms for? What do the Israelis need $30 billion worth of arms for? What do the Egyptians need $13 billion of American arms for? What do any of these countries need those arms for? Oh, but we've got to protect Israel. Yeah. Yeah, they're armed to the teeth. Like we'd let anything happen to Israel if they didn't have so much as a rifle in that country. Like the first time that the Iranians or anybody else attacked them, like we wouldn't move in and protect them, okay? The Saudis. The Saudis, on the one hand, are backing the Sunnis in the sectarian violence going on in Iraq. We know that. And now we're selling arms to the Sunnis, providing arms to the Sunnis. The Saudis are giving arms to the Sunnis. And yet, supposedly, we're on the side of the Shia government of Maliki. Oh, my head spins when I stop and think about the things that this government has done. Absolutely amazing. Let's head on over to the phone. Hello, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, you got Dave up here in Northern Cal.
Hi, Dave.
You know, and we've got all these criminals in power, as we've discussed several times, because they cheat, they rig elections, and something good may be just about to happen in the state of California, and that is our Secretary of State, Deborah Bowen. She's a good Secretary of State, and she spent the last week or so having hackers come in and see how reliable are these voting machines, and these hackers were into each machine in a matter of minutes, flipping votes all over the place. So she finds that she's up against big corporate in special interests that don't want to give up these machines. So she says, good people of California, let me know what you want me to do. And she's just got till Friday. That's the deadline to make a decision. So I know you got a lot of good California voters, and I wanted to give out her site and see if people would call her and email her and tell her.
Please do.
Yeah, she's the three W's, of course, .sos.ca.gov. You know, and I suppose a nice recommendation would, why don't we recycle these voting machines and make tricycles and toasters that are something useful. But my idea was to bring them down to the bay like they did with the tea in and drop them into the bay.
Oh, what a sight that would be, Dave.
It would be, but...
what a sight.
It would be a polluter, people tell me.
Oh, yeah, but you know, a little pollution to save our democracy might not be a bad trade-off, you know?
Well...
I'm not a polluter, but... you know, it's a few hundred million dollars we're talking about all over the country with these damn voting machines. And what is more important when you throw it on the scales? Protecting our way of life, our democracy, or somebody making money off of voting machines. Jeez, you know.
Well, you know, I've been thinking that the one way, if we could make sure, if they could give one of those barcodes on every one, the Oregon plan sounds to me like it would work the best, because everybody, in effect, gets an absentee ballot. Everybody fills it out with pencil, puts it back in the envelope and delivers it to the registrar's office or puts it in the mailbox. And they can be counted on trick machines, voting machines that will cheat. But in the end, there is the paper.
Sure.
People can sit down and manually recount it. So, and that's one that you can put in real fast. That isn't going to take an awful lot of time. We've already got absentee ballots in every state.
And they pretty much nailed it down now that with the voting machines, millions of votes can be flipped.
Oh, yes. Did you hear this news about Deborah Bowen's test this week?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, every machine was invaded with less than 2 minutes. And I was listening to your friend Tony Truppiano this morning talking about it, and he says, well, could I do that? Could I? You could learn how to invade one of these machines in less than 2 minutes. I could show you how to do it. So.
Yeah. And, you know, Ohio, last election, who knows? Who knows? I think we do know, but, you know.
What I do know is that several little precincts with 200 or 250 voters registered in that precinct, those precincts delivered 1,000 votes to Bush and the GOP. So, and people screaming, how can this be? That's not possible. We demand a recount. They say, this There's nothing to be recounted. My worst fear this time is that almost all the states throw out these machines. This news that's coming out from Deborah Bowen now, this is going to induce a lot of good Secretary of State to say, no, not in my state. But let's say one or two states continues with the machines, and all the paper states go Democratic, and the one or two machine states throw enough votes, flip enough votes, that it offsets all other 49 states. No? And then we have Rush Limbaugh once again hollering, get over it! We won! It's an honest election!
Yeah, well, Stalin had it right, didn't he? It was Stalin, or was it Lenin? It was
Lenin.
Not who votes, who counts the votes. And who counted the votes is all that mattered in the last two elections. I don't think there's any question about it.
Right. What machines they count them on. I mean, what thinking people would put in office people that will do us this much harm? You know, greedy billionaires, gay-hating fundamentalists, that's not that many people. You know,
and an apathetic public that allowed it to happen.
Well, you know, I think so many think I'd do anything I could to undo the harm that has been done. But you have to ask yourself, too. You know, you do a lot. You talk to a lot of people. You may help make a lot of people aware that wouldn't otherwise be aware. And I demonstrate all over the place several times a week. But, you know, they're so arrogant. They're saying, we don't care what you people think. We don't care how you vote. We count the votes, you know.
Yeah, because really, folks, when it comes down to it, we inside the Beltway, we that have that mentality that we own you, we don't care what you think. We have the right to own this government and run this government and run this nation the way we want to, because we're entitled and you're not. I mean, that's the attitude.
Well, you know, the Judiciary Committee now is getting up the courage to be subpoenaing some of these insider monstrosities, and I think they're not going to honor the subpoenas.
No.
And then the word goes out that by law, the sergeant-at-arms must be instructed with U.S. Marshals to go arrest them. And I picture that they just may be met at the door with goons, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's not going to happen. The Capitol Police are not going to be arresting Harriet Myers and Gonzo and, what's his name, Chief Staff and Karl Rove. And no, they're not going to be sitting in a cell in the Capitol building someplace, that's for sure.
I wouldn't think so, because that's their M.O. They're answerable to nobody.
Next thing you know, you'd be seeing tanks around the White House. that's the next step, the old Banana Republic. I tell you.
Well,
Dave,
I think if that standoff came, I would think there would be an impeachment within the week.
I would hope so. If that's what it took, I'd be all for it.
But then I see them in the White House saying, we don't accept your impeachment. We don't honor that Congress has any such powers.
Yeah.
You know, they're not real strong on the Constitution. I think you've noticed.
I have noticed a time or two where they've had just a little bit of contempt for it. Dave, thanks for your call. Good to hear from you. Ah, yes. Hard to believe that this government would have any contempt for our Constitution. Have they shown anything but contempt for the Constitution of these United States? I don't think so. And, you know, the rest of the world is now showing contempt for our country and for our government. And here we have Gates and Condi Rice going over to the Middle East trying to get some understanding in that area. Not happening. Oh, and did you notice during the news, just as an aside here, did you notice during the news that the company that manufactured the OxyContin got fined, what was it, $694 million or something? Hell, Rush Limbaugh used that much of it himself. They made like $2.7 billion profit on it, somewhere in that neighborhood, and they only got fined $694 million or so. I'm pretty sure Limbaugh consumed that much. I heard about the hands full of the stuff that he took. Can you imagine taking drugs until your hearing was gone and you knew that's what was causing it? Can you imagine doing that? And then being held up as some sort of a saint, as some sort of an important guy, as some sort of an icon to the people on the right in this country. Can you imagine that? A man supposedly intelligent, good entertainer, I will grant you. But a man that's kind of a symbol of the right. He's hung up and strung out on drugs so much that he's losing his hearing, and he knows why, and he continues to do it. And he keeps right on doing it, right up until the time his mate is ready to talk to the National Enquirer or whatever for money. And then he admits it. Oh, gee, I think I'm hooked on this stuff, and I'm going to go to rehab. And yet, the man was and still is an icon to the neocons, to the people on the right. Go figure. Just go figure. Back to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. I thought you'd like to learn, hear a few things I learned about the election process in Oregon when I got paranoid.
Yeah.
The last time I voted. I went down to my local county elections office, and they do use ESNS machines to count them, but they're not networked, which means the major path for infecting these counting machines is blocked off. They're not hooked up to anything. There's just one machine in each office, and you run stuff through it and counts the ballots and stuff. In a presidential election here in Oregon, those ballots are saved for a minimum of 2 years, longer if it's a close election. So anytime there's a question, they can go back and they can physically recount the ballot, every one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, when you vote, you have to sign the envelope. It's called you put your ballot in an envelope, and you have to sign that envelope. Now, before they're opened, every one of those signatures is matched to a signature that they have on file. They are matched visually, one by one. They hire a whole lot of people, and they go through and they match every one of these signatures by eye.
Well, you should have it confirmed. We take this whole process in such a, we have such a cavalier attitude about it all across the country. Everybody thinks that that it must be honest, and it's not.
That's what they're trying to do here. It's very, very convenient, but it's also, they take it really, really serious. And that's why, this state consistently votes Democrat, because, shows up going Democrat, because they can't steal it here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know. That's more states need to have those safeguards built in and so forth. Hopefully the awareness that the news over the weekend and about the hacking and so forth, hopefully that'll spur some people to do the right thing. I sure hope so.
I don't hold out much. Well, because
the apathy abounds. It certainly does. Hey, thanks for your call.
Thank you. You have a nice day.
Bye bye. Oh, yes. What a shame. Hey, I want to talk about something we normally don't talk about on this program. Okay, it's not that it's taboo. We just don't talk about it very much. And I ran across this thing. I don't often read Texas newspapers, but I was reading the Austin American Statesman today and came across an interesting bit of research that piqued my interest, most certainly. And it's a research piece by the University of Texas, psychologist at the University of Texas, as exploring the reasons people have sex. Now, you better get all the little kids out of the room, okay? Yes, people do have reasons to have sex. It just doesn't come naturally to a lot of folks, I guess. But the study catalogs people's motivations, and the motivations go from fun to status. And let me just give you a little bit of this article. It says, scholars in antiquity began counting the ways that humans have sex, but they weren't so diligent in cataloging the reasons humans wanted to get into all those positions. And Darwin and his successors offered a few explanations of mating strategies to find better genes, to gain status and resources, but they neglected to produce a Kama Sutra of sexual motivations. Now, leave it to the good old Americans to come up with this. The British, nah, they don't care. The French, they don't care about motivation either. Maybe we shouldn't either, but I found this somewhat interesting. So, thanks to the psychologists at the University of Texas, we can at last count the whys. After asking nearly 2,000 people, and I wonder who did this and how did they stand on a street corner with clipboards and ask these questions? Would have been interesting to watch them do it. They asked nearly 2,000 people why they'd had sex. And the researchers have assembled and they've categorized a total of, get this, out of 2,000 people, 237 reasons. Everything from I wanted to feel closer to God, to I was drunk, to wanting to have a child. Now, that's quite a spectrum there. The researchers, David Buss and Cindy Meston, say they think their list, published in the August issue of Archives of Sexual Behavior, is the most thorough taxonomy of sexual motivation ever compiled. Oh, my, even more than Kinsey. Who knew, for instance, that a headache had any erotic significance except as an excuse for saying no? But respondents of both sexes explained that they'd had sex to, quote, get rid of a headache. It's number 173 on the list. Others said they did it to, quote, help me fall asleep, to make my partner feel powerful, to burn calories, oh, I've heard that one, to return a favor, to keep warm, to hurt an enemy. Let me see, how does that go, to hurt an enemy? I don't know. Or change the topic of conversation. So, let me get this right. They're sitting here talking about politics, and one of the others is, well, let's have sex in order to change the topic of conversation. Okay. The lamest reason said it seemed like good exercise. And someone also responded by saying somebody dared me. Other interesting parts of the study. The researchers collected the data by first asking more than 400 people to list their reasons for having sex, and then asking more than 1,500 others to rate how important each reason was to them, and that's how they came up with the 237 reasons. The best news is that both men and women ranked The best news is that both men and women ranked the same reason most often, and that was, I was attracted to the person. Well, thank God for that. I feel better about this whole thing now. I really do. The rest of the top 10 for each gender were also almost the same, including, I wanted to express my love for the person, or I was sexually aroused and wanted to read a release, and it's fun. All right, now we're getting into the nitty-gritty of this thing. Women were more likely to say they had sex because, quote, I wanted to express my love for the person and I realized I was in love. Now, I know what you girls think about us guys. That we're not, okay. The results contradicted another stereotype about women, their supposed tendency to use sex to gain status or resources. The findings suggest that men do these things more than women, alluding to the respondents who said they'd had sex to get things like a promotion, a raise, or a favor. Now, I never thought of that. You needed a raise, you just... Okay. Men were much more likely than women to say they'd had sex to boost their social status or because the partner was famous. And where's this one here? Oh, but then men were also more likely than women to say they'd had sex because, quote, I was slumming. And then this one here bothered me, and I wonder if you. I was the last part of this article. This one I think is kind of sad. Having sex out of a sense of duty showed up in a separate study as being especially frequent amongst older women, Buss said. But both sexes seemed to practice a strategy that he called mate guarding, as illustrated in one of the reasons given by survey respondents that I was afraid my partner wouldn't have an affair if I didn't. That's kind of sad, don't you think? I think that's very, very sad. 866-546-50. So there you have it, your Guy James Kinsey report for the day. And I noticed we didn't get one single call during that. Either snoozing or, I don't know, something else. I'm not exactly sure. 866-546-5254. Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you.
I think tide turning, as I remember, I was raised in the desert, but tides kind of turn. It's easy to see a tide turn. Did I say those words? No question that the enemy has tried to spread sectarian violence. They use violence as a tool to do that. We need an energy bill that encourages consumption. Our enemies are innovative and resourceful, and so are we. They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we. We must never stop thinking about how best to defend our country. I'm the decider, and I decide what is best.
The United States of America is engaged in a war against a extremist group of folks.
Families is where our nation finds hope, where wings take dream.
If you don't stand for anything, you don't stand for anything. If you don't stand for something, you don't stand for anything.
Fool me once. Shame on you. You fooled me. We can't get fooled again.
In my speech to the nation, whatever you want to call it,
at the high school level, and find out that the literacy level of our children are appalling.
I hear there's rumors on the internets that we're going to have a draft.
You're working hard to put food on your family.
I know the human being and fish can coexist peacefully.
Tribal sovereignty means that. It's sovereign. You've been given sovereignty and you're viewed as a sovereign entity.
Okay.
And therefore, the relationship between the federal government and tribes is one between sovereign entities.
They underestimated the compassion of our country. I think they misunderestimated the will and determination of the commander-in-chief, too.
Hey, back with you here on the Guy James Show. You got about 18 and a half minutes yet to call the show if you would like, and I hope you would like. 866-546-5254. Sitting here in a studio with not a bit of OxyContin in it. You know, I was thinking, old Limbaugh, yes, he's number one. Makes, $35 million a year, and he's the darling of the right and all that. Has a big house over on Palm Beach, but here we are sitting here in our beautiful studio. It may not be quite like his in Palm Beach, but we don't have cochlear ear implants in our ears. We can hear just fine. Never was addicted to OxyContin. Well, anyway. And speaking of characters on the right, how about good old Bill O'Reilly? Well, what about this O'Reilly character attacked in Daily Kos almost every day now? He's saying the Kos has outrageous statements on its comment pages. Hey, Billo, I don't know if you've noticed, but there's some outrageous things said on your comment page, and people pay to put them up there. That's right. There aren't very many people who are more conservative in the media than O'Reilly, but his outright paranoia, his ego, and his mouth, he's really something else. He really is. You've got Hannity, Hannity's a bozo. He doesn't have any intelligence, and he's not terribly sincere about a lot of things. And, of course, we've mentioned that Limbaugh's got his drug addiction and obviously hates himself. And then you got Ann Coulter. Who probably shaves every day. I'll tell you, some of these people are really, really, really interesting. Really, really interesting. But O'Reilly, the thing that really gets me, and I don't know why Keith Olbermann, when he talks about O'Reilly, and let's face it, he talks about O'Reilly just about every day, it must really get to O'Reilly. And Keith evidently knows it. But why don't they mention the old falafel kid and the little predicament that O'Reilly found himself in just a short time ago, maybe 3 years ago? He's the only guy I ever heard of that got caught in a sexual situation and like that, and then had to negotiate a huge payoff. I mean, the cat was out of the bag already, so to speak. But O'Reilly, Mr. Morality, you know, he condemns Bill Clinton for the Clinton's indiscretions. And then O'Reilly makes a big deal out of that, and then he gets caught with his hand in a cookie jar. Interesting, these right-wingers. Very interesting. Let's go on over to the phone. Hello, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. This is Phil up in Daytona Beach.
Hi, Phil.
Hi. O'Reilly and Hannity and all of them, they're about as conservative as... I can't think of anything, but they're not. They're the antithesis of the conservative. This whole administration is just the opposite of what the traditional conservative.
Yeah. What would Barry Goldwater have to say? Well, we already know what Barry Goldwater.
He's spinning in his grave 100 miles an hour right now. You know. And, you know, I think this is a technique that we should explore. And I've used it here with people that say they're conservatives. You know, they put the, you know, Power of Pride bumper stickers on their cars and all that.
Yeah.
And I say, well, you know, I ask them first, what are the three cornerstones of the Republican Party platform? You know, traditional conservative. And they can't tell you, you know. I say, you know, small government, fiscal conservatism, and you know, and stay the heck out of my life, you know, and privacy, you know, what I'm saying is call them on their BS, you know. Say, well, you know, point out that they're not a conservative, and then you show them that they're a phony, you know, and then you take away their credibility by you know, pulling the curtain and, you know, pay attention to the man behind the curtain.
Absolutely. You know? And, you know, as far as the privacy issue, especially with the issues coming up now about this massive data mining and all this that is going on.
It's obscene, man.
Yeah, it's so long as it's the guy down the street and you can't prove it's me that they're spying on. You know, I have nothing to hide. Then it's okay with them. They can spy on everybody in the whole neighborhood as long as it's not them.
Yeah, and another thing you use back with them, you know, is how about when do you want Hillary to have that power? You know,
yeah,
and you know, because Hillary is so implanted in these little brains of theirs, you know. I wanted to get to impeachment if we have a couple of minutes. The line is we don't have enough votes, or you know, and damn it, that's not the point. This administration, if you stacked up impeachable offenses, hell, if you stacked up war crimes and actual treasonous acts, it would reach the ceiling, you know?
Sure.
If the Congress does not impeach, begin proceedings to impeach, we no longer have a constitutional republic.
Well, Phil, how strange do you find that comment by Pelosi that she made yesterday, that if I weren't in Congress and I were an ordinary citizen, I'd be calling for impeachment? I read that and I thought,
boy, I missed that guy.
Yeah,
I got rid of my television and I wasn't on the internet.
I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but
yeah.
But that's what she said. If I were a regular citizen, I'd be calling for impeachment.
Well, that's hopeful then, because she's, you know, the people power. It sounds like people power. And damn it, people, we have the power if we just exercise it. You know, there's 535 whores in Washington, and there's 299 million of us, you know. I think, well, that's a great sign, guy, because she's feeling the heat. And, you know, another thing I wanted to talk about, giving these people heat, are citizen, something that's really taken off in the 9/11 truth movement, but can be used for any other thing, is citizen journalism. People are showing up to these events with their camcorders, and one person, they'll have a buddy, you know, one personal, you know, you put on a nice shirt or a tie or something like that, and you start asking questions. Even if they don't address you, you ask the question loudly, and it's being heard, you know, like, 54% of the American people want Bush impeached, and why do you feel you have the power to supersede the wishes of the people and the Constitution? You know, put her on the spot. And somebody put her on the spot the other day, that website wearechange.org.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these kids, and they're kids, guy. They're like 19, 20, 21-year-old kids getting in the face of David Rockefeller and Zbigniew Brzezinski, Rudy Giuliani, you know. And hell, if they can do it, any of us can do it. And they're just kids.
Oh, you have to wonder with all these little hand cams and the cell phones with the cams on nowadays and everything. You have to wonder how long it'll be before these politicians completely shield themselves from the American public. I think that'll be their tact. They'll get to the point like the president does, that they don't ever want to face the public. And I'm afraid some of them will do that.
They ain't gonna. If there's enough of us out there saying the heck with it, I mean, they're already tried it, because Rockefeller in New York City and Giuliani, you know, he really got put on the spot. It was on NBC News and Channel 4 News in New York City when these kids, they were 9/11 family, you know, victim, 9/11 victim family members, and some of the firefighters were, you know, you said, look, you're on film telling Peter Jennings on ABC News that you were told the towers were coming down. Who told you? How the heck would they know when it's that's never been done in the history and the fires were isolated? You know, who the heck told you? How did they know? And why didn't you warn the firefighters to get out? You know, and here that's on NBC News. So, you know, an individual can have an effect by putting a question right in their face. And you know, they have to come out to these events to you know, glad hand people so they can get their donations.
Well, there's one thing for sure, nowadays with personal computers and the interaction we all have with one another and all, it's going to be hard for politicians to ever again hide from any statement that they make. You know, they used to do that. Now almost everything they say is recorded, written down. It makes it almost impossible for them to hide from things that they've said in the past. So,
and we have these tools, and it's almost like these tools have been, you know, we're in this position where we're so overwhelmed, we're fighting the, you know, the Goliath, and but we have tools that we're not utilizing as much as we can, and I think, you know, to hell with giving money to the Democratic Party and the MoveOn.org. I say be the media ourselves. You know, if you got a couple of $100, buy one of those camcorders. And if not, take your $20, guy, and print up, you know, a couple of hundred copies of just some informative flyer.
Yeah.
You know, That lists impeachable offenses or you know, the 250 unanswered questions about 9/11 or anything like that.
Well, we have to get the public more aware, and if it takes neighbor to neighbor to do it, which in your case is what you're talking about, why?
Yeah.
And then that's what we have to do. Hey, I got another call, Phil. Got to run.
Okay, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, bye now. And let's head on over to line one here. Hello, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, this is Juanita.
Hello, Juanita.
I watched a lot of different things on TV and heard a lot of different things, you know, concerning our government and so forth. But I wanted to bring up one thing. I know we don't have much time, but about the children, the insurance for the children,
mm-hmm.
and that how they, I listened to a little bit of Congress. They're trying to get more added on to it.
Yes.
The Senate is. You know, like for their teeth and everything, because some children can actually die of bad teeth. And but anyway, I saw Tony Snow, is that his name?
Yes.
Today, and he was saying, well, they've got like $6 billion. That's a lot. That's, my terms, that's a lot. Well, what about what all the money that they're spending over in Iraq? On not on our soldiers, on that building.
Sure.
And all that other junk.
Yeah,
but,
and you know, Tony has had health problems, and he had good health care, didn't he?
Yeah.
Every detail attended to, paid for by the government and
yeah,
and all the congressmen.
He's threatening to veto it if they go up on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
As sorry, Seth.
As long as him and his friends have good health care, that's all that matters.
He's so sorry.
Yeah. Well, like I said, Michael Moore. I heard Michael Moore say this is the only developed country in the world where health care is talked about as a benefit instead of a right. It is a right.
Yeah. And I just wanted to say one more thing. You know, when they said to him the other day about children not having health care, he said, well, all I got to do is go to the emergency room.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, that's just the way he is.
That is. It is.
And he don't care. I mean, Cheney's on the loose. Now he's on different. I think he's going to be on Larry King tonight. I'm not planning.
Yeah, I think so. I originally thought it was going to be on last night. Then I heard this morning that it was going to be on there tonight. We should all get our popcorn in,
or maybe tomorrow. But I'm not planning on watching it. I can't.
Well, I don't want to ruin my TV set, so I would end up throwing a brick through it or something. Hey, Juanita, thanks for your call.
Okay. show you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Ah, yes. I'd throw a shoe through my TV if I had to watch that. I don't know that there's ever been a more loathsome individual. Speaking of Dick Cheney, I thought Donald Rumsfeld was pretty doggone repugnant. I didn't like Richard Nixon, but I have to say he was a lot more likable to me, personally anyway, than Dick Cheney. Trying to think of some other real curmudgeons that we've had in the government, but I can think of none that that approaches the despicable nature of one Richard Cheney. I don't know what it is about him all that snarling, nasty, argumentative. He's just a real hateful man. And I haven't seen any signs that he's anything but that. Just sad that a man like that ends up being the Vice President of the United States, as they always say, one heartbeat away from the presidency. Well, impeachment is not on the table right now. Would that it could be. I hope some of our Congress critters start taking us seriously. We are not the fringe left. We are people that have the interest of this nation at heart. We are people that know that impeachment would be good for this nation. The world would look upon us differently than they do now if we would throw these bums out of the office. Maybe future people that would inhabit the Oval Office and the Vice Presidential Office might take it as a lesson if we impeach these people for their crimes and their the horrible things they've done to this country, their incompetence. Their malfeasance. There comes a time when you need to be held accountable for your actions. And this administration has not been held accountable in any way, shape, or form. And it's time we as a nation stand up and be counted. Republicans and Democrats alike, to get these people out of office and put in somebody that's at least representative of the thinking of this country. Because God knows, the people of this country are not of the same mind of Bush and Cheney and their ilk. That's not what this country is about. Never has been. And my God, I hope never will be. That's how I feel about it. Well, I want to thank you for listening to the show today. I want to thank Chalmers Johnson for being our guest. We'll have another great guest for you tomorrow. In the meantime, we'll remind you it's a listener-supported program. We could use some help right now. You're listening to The Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network. And don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. All that's left is the truth.